Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of 410 Sports Talk. I'm James Haskell, along with my co-host Glenn Martin, as always, and DK in the background here on a Tuesday night. Glenn, Tuesday night is generally a therapeutic night for us, I feel like, because we reflect on the past, but then we end up generally being excited about the future.
Yeah, turning the page. And look, this was not an easy weekend for the Ravens. Not only did they lose to a Colts team that I think the Ravens are better than, but also everyone else in the AFC North won, which is just as bad as it could get for the Ravens. I mean, even, the Joey Burrow was able to gut it out and muscle through a Monday night performance and get the win there too. So yeah, not a weekend that the Ravens would have wanted to take a loss if you have to take one with the entire rest of the division winning, but an opportunity to bounce back with a division game on the horizon. So yeah, like you said, we're going to take the time to kind of turn the page on this past week, talk about what went wrong, talk about the state of the team right now with the injuries. We got a new addition on the way. Of course, we're going to have our weekly visit from Cole Jackson, who is our resident film guru. You can follow over at Road Graders on YouTube. But yeah, it's a lot to get into, Jimbo. I think it's like you mentioned when you talked before the show, Harbaugh looked pretty like a little agitated, as he usually does the week after a loss.
Yeah, generally that's how it goes, and I don't expect that to change at this point in his life.
No.
So
it might get worse as he gets older.
Yeah, you know, the long-winded stuff you're getting from us this week, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not too much for John, but we do have some news to talk about as the mosquitoes are absolutely tearing me up. And that is the signing of one Kyle Van Noy, potentially the only Cougar that I like, Cougar as in BYU Cougar. I like Kyle Van Noy, and I'm
what do you got against Cougars, bruh?
Yeah, well, when they got BYU in front of them,
I
got a problem with them. It doesn't take too much, just three letters.
Yeah.
I'm already agitated. So ultimately, though, I'm really excited about this signing, and I think he's really going to help this team. It's crazy to think, though, Glenn, that we are going into week four, and our outside linebacker, if you start two outside linebackers in this coming game, it has potential to be two guys that weren't on the roster or even really on the radar that much. I know there was some scuttlebutt around Kyle, but, you know, think about we had Adafe and Ajabo or even Bowser, and now all of a sudden it's like Clowney and Van Noy, right? It's just a totally different scene. I mean, I guess that's how it goes in the NFL, but just kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah, I think the Ravens are fortunate to get, Van Noy in addition to when they got Clowney. Because, yeah, you're right. It's like, man, if you would have told me, say, week one of the preseason that starting week three outside linebackers would be Jadeveon Clowney and Kyle Van Noy, what are you talking about? Yeah, I mean, maybe Justin Houston, maybe, but certainly not these two guys. But I've obviously been really happy what we've seen from Clowney. So hopefully Van Noy will look just as good as Jadeveon has looked since he's been here. But obviously he's a versatile player, Jimbo. He's a guy who can cover. He can get after the passer. I think he's got five straight seasons with at least five or more sacks, but also can do the Bowser role with dropping into coverage and can help with that. So not only does this add depth, but Jimbo, I hate to say it, but I think it tells me that maybe Adafe's a little further out than we're hoping for, and maybe Ajabo is also going to be out for a little while, and maybe Tyus Bowser's not going to be ready anytime soon. I mean, unfortunately, I'm happy they're bringing in Kyle Van Noy, but I think that means we're not going to see these other guys for quite some time.
You know what the crazy part about all of that is, Glenn?
What's that?
I don't care.
What?
I don't care that much.
Like, what? Adafe's been playing. He was playing well.
He has, but I think Clowney has been playing just as well. And to me, I'm not too psyched about the other guys. Like, I don't know. I feel like right now for this year, for at least the next 4 to 6 games, I'm okay having a vet there, right? Now Clowney needs to stay healthy and continue to produce. You're right. I'm not saying that Adafe hasn't been producing. He's been playing well, but it's not like it's been a revelation. You know what I mean? Adafe's played well. I can't disregard him, but he still has zero sacks.
Right. Does he have zero?
Zero.
Yeah, he does have
zero. He's got two zeros in each of his names. Adafe Owe, and he's got zero in his stat sheet. Like triple zero.
Oh, man.
Like,
well, I mean, look, I think what it does also is it's now, like you said, making us rely on a guy in Kyle Van Noy who hasn't participated in any training camp, any preseason. So I think it's also like worrisome that like, oh no, I mean, is Van Noy going to be able to hold up for an entire game? And look, they have Jeremiah Moon, who's a practice squad guy, and they got Tavius Robinson, who's young and raw. But man, I don't know, man. I'd like to see, even just from a depth, like to give these guys a little bit of a break where the drop off isn't as steep, you know, from as it might be from Van Noy down to Tavius Robinson at this point in his career. Man, I'm nervous about the state of the outside linebacker room, even with a banged up Browns team coming into town who don't have Nick Chubb running the ball for him. Uh-oh. Jimbo. Either Jimbo's frozen or he's just so furious at what I said that he's just close. Oh, there we go.
I'm back. You're back.
Okay,
back.
Here we go.
Yeah. No, I understand your point. But I don't know. I'm excited to see something different is ultimately, I guess, what I'm trying to say. Like, just excited to see what Kyle Van Noy can do. He's a proven vet. And we've been relying on our young guys for a while, and it's been fun. But I'm excited to kind of mix it up a little bit. Sean Pisker says, evening, boys. I've digested this loss and moved on. In and out. He's digested it all the way through the digestive tract, and it is out the toilet.
Gone.
Right in the crapper. Especially when I think about how many things had to go wrong for them to lose. Yeah. Also positive to think most of our injuries, I don't think, are season ending. Good timing.
We're hurting here, Jimbo.
That it was kind of on your mind. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. Yeah, you were kind of breaking up.
All right.
It adds to the effect that it froze with your mouth wide open in the roaring. I mean, yeah, Jimbo's having some issues. So I'm just going to talk about Sean's comment here. Look, Sean, you're like every fan. You're emotional when we lose. You want people fired. You want guys cut. You want new guys brought in. Oh, okay. All right, Jimbo. I don't know what that noise was, but it was awfully noisy. There we go. Okay, here we are. But also to Sean's point, yeah, most of these injuries aren't thought to be season ending, but we still don't know because of the tight-lipped nature of John Harbaugh if these could be still weeks out, and that's still a scary proposition. Now, I'm gonna put Cole on the spot when we get him in here, Jimbo, because he tweeted, and he's been on point lately with his predictions about when guys are coming back and are going to be able to help out. And he tweeted, reinforcements are coming with the big eye emojis. Now, he didn't clarify, as he tends to not, but he's been right on all his predictions. He said that Mark Andrews would play in week two. He said, I mean, well before it was expected. So I'm gonna you know, put him right on the spot and ask Cole his opinion. Because, yeah, maybe we are getting some of these guys back. I think OBJ is rumored that he might be on his way back. I don't know, but we need something to happen. Now, in corresponding moves to the wide receiver core, speaking of that, let's see. We saw that Rashad Bateman had a hamstring injury at the end of last game. And so the Ravens have signed Dante Demas to the practice squad in addition to – oh, man, I'm cycling through here. I know it wasn't our guy Prochet. I think he's on the practice, or he's working out for the Steelers, man. Oh man, James Prochet working out for the Steelers. But the Ravens have signed Demas, and who else is it? Help me out. Okay. You're pointing at something. Tariq Black. Okay, there we go. He's back. All right, Jimbo. Changing locations, right. I see.
Am I all right?
Yeah, you sound
Holy
good.
Day, dude.
Yeah. Okay. So Tariq
Black.
But
I was listening to you with what you were saying, though.
Okay.
I was able to hear you. I just.
Yeah, they brought in some reinforcements. So they still have, let's not forget, Laquan Treadwell's in the practice squad. He could certainly be elevated game day if Bateman's not available and OBJ isn't back. But they also now have Demas available, who knows the playbook, and Tariq Black, who knows the playbook. Interestingly enough, they did not bring back James Prochet, and he's now working out for the Steelers. I don't know if this was his choice and that he thought maybe there was a better avenue to get on the field through Pittsburgh or whatnot, but it looks like those two guys are back instead of James Prochet, so good for them. Jimbo looks like he's still having some internet issues. Let's see. Massey says, 48 hours later, what annoys you the most about defeat now that you've reflected on it more? Well, to me, it's the last two possessions. You know, after you get the safety and you get the kick, it's like, look, I know there was some confusion. Now I'm hearing it with the clock in the stadium versus what we were seeing on the broadcast feed, and that when Zay Flowers was initially running down the field to return that punt, it was under his understanding, it was a minute 58 was left on the clock. Then they changed it to 2:03, and it wasn't relayed to him to kill that time. But either way, you get the ball on two occasions in overtime, and you can't get inside the range of the greatest kicker of all time. It just blows my mind. I mean, there was occasions where they got to midfield twice and weren't able to get that extra 10 yards, which was all that was needed. And it was a failure of all of them. I can't wait to have Cole Jackson on in a little bit, because he did a really good job of breaking down really what happened to the Ravens on those final two drives, where they seemingly couldn't move the ball after. I was just frustrated. After getting there quite quickly, they all of a sudden were hitting the brick wall. Jimbo, how you doing? What's going on? You look miserable. It's just the internet.
I am crazy. I am miserable. Mm-hmm. I literally want to punch a hole in the wall right now.
Well, don't do that, dude. Don't do that.
Yeah, it's infuriating. You know what I'm saying, though? Sometimes things just get under your skin, you know? Yeah. But I just wanted to say one thing. I wanted to go way back just for a second, because it's been on my mind. Sean, I just want to give you a friendly reminder that Justin Tucker had to be the fail point for us, ultimately. I'll rest our fate on the leg of Justin Tucker 999,000 times out of a million. So
there we go.
Let's not forget that Justin Tucker, he hits that, we win that game. So anyway, I heard all the stuff you're saying. I'm still working on this whole thing. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, rip Brooks Robinson. It's a bummer, but like Glenn said, I mean, he lived a great life. He's a great O. He'll have a statue forever. And I think he's my mom's favorite Raven. A Raven. Look at me. Favorite Oriole. And yeah, Van Noy.
Oh. It's pretty bad, Jimbo. Let's
see what we can do. Gosh, damn.
He's still struggling. But yeah, now RIP to Brooks. I mean, look, he's a little before my time, but I mean, you just ask any older baseball fan of the Orioles or in the Baltimore area, and they'll tell you all you need to hear about. I mean, obviously, great player, but I think what set him apart was the kind of guy he was and how he treated those around him. So, it was rough watching Jim Palmer talk about it. Got choked up. Tough to see, but lived a long, healthy life. 86 years old. So shout out to Brooksy. A lot of people named Brooks in this area because of that guy. So pretty cool. Ravens O's Nation says, shout out live from the O's game. Go O's, go Ravens. Yeah, up 1-0 in the seventh. Sharpening up the tools before a postseason run that, man, fans are excited for. I mean, holy, are fans waiting for this Orioles run? It's been a long time coming. Absolutely excited to see. And Bradish is looking top form. 7 innings shutout ball right now. He's looking good. So shout out to Ravens O's Nation. Sean Pisker, also, side note, did Trenton Simpson fall off the face of the earth? Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see him getting very little work. Now, look, he's undersized to play outside linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens. He's a smaller guy. To ask him to set the edge in the run game is a tall task when you're talking about a guy who's going to be well undersized, going up against tackles, pulling guards, even tight ends. He's going to be giving up quite a bit of weight and poundage here. So I just wonder if they're trying to find – really where they're going to put him. Maybe he is envisioned to be the Patrick Queen replacement for next year. And of course, with the way Patrick Queen's playing right now, there's no getting him off the field and putting Trenton Simpson on the field. So maybe it's just, hey, wait your turn. He's a young guy. He's still got a lot to learn. But as far as him being asked to play an every down or certainly an early down role in the edge is, I think, a lot to ask from him at his size. But let's see. Laura Roten says, hey, guys, I'm really late to the ball game. I don't know what you've been over yet, but wondering what your thoughts are on playing the Browns this week. It makes me nervous because of their number one defense. Yeah, they've been tough this year. Miles Garrett, I mean, this dude is giving nightmares to offensive coordinators and offensive linemen. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the clip, but they were chasing Miles Garrett with multiple tight ends where the tight ends are going in motion to the left. Miles Garrett gets up and walks over to the right. They come back in motion to the right. He gets up and goes to the left, and they're just chasing each other. I mean, this guy, man, I kind of feel bad for a guy like Patrick McCary this week, knowing what he's got in for him. It's going to be tough. But look, hey, the Ravens can do it, man. They absolutely could get it done. They dealt with a fierce pass rush in Cincinnati, and it came out of there with zero sacks allowed. So, Laura, I'm nervous as well. This is a heck of a defense they're playing. But look, the Ravens are pretty good too. And if they just stop shooting themselves in the foot like they did last week over and over again, I think they'll be just fine. And look, we're going to get into that Browns matchup this Friday. We'll have a guest on from Cleveland to represent their side of the matchup. But yeah, it's going to be a big game. It's certainly a game that's made bigger by the loss to Indy and the fact that Cleveland's playing so well. Yeah, you got to give them credit. Deshaun Watson, don't like the guy, but he played well when they needed him to most last week after Nick Chubb going down. And Ford had two touchdowns, Chubb's backup, but it looked a whole lot different than when Nick Chubb was in there. I think it's pretty obvious, and that's not revolutionary to say. Well, looks like I'm going to be doing this one solo for a little while as Jimbo Slimbo is still working. I think he's climbing the pole right now. He's got wires over one arm. He's got a hard hat on because safety first. But I got Jimbo scaling it right now. Oh, speaking of Jimbo, back in there. Just looking frustrated, bro. It's all right, man.
Gosh, just annoying. There we go. Thank you, DK. I'm on my phone right now. If it cuts out again, please let me know.
Hey, it's better.
I've resorted to my phone.
Yeah, well, it's working well. So,
okay.
Murtaz Malik says, do you think Bautista comes back for the playoffs? I tell you what, I am not letting myself get excited. But at the same time, I keep seeing these damn clips of him throwing off the mound today, and I heard that glove popping when that fastball was hitting. So it sounds like they're – I don't know what they have up their sleeve, and again, I'm not counting on anything, but I'm seeing what you guys are seeing on Twitter as well, and it's exciting, absolutely exciting.
That is exciting. Nothing like the old sound of a good pop of the glove. But I just want to say – did anyone – were you already talking about this King Dan guy that was talking about the Ravens? It's funny that he was talking about the – King Dan talks about – seems to be a little bit of a troll. But he's talking about the Ravens players' choice in women instead of talking about his quarterback, which I thought was pretty ironic and kind of comical to me. Anyway, it'll be real fun to – yeah, I mean –
is this a Browns fan?
Yeah, and he's talking
they
about –
they have fans?
You know, they have people that are masochists, I guess, is at this point.
Wait, the Cleveland Browns have fans?
Hey, man, they ride with Deshaun Watson. They ride with Deshaun.
No, I know they have people who live in the city of Cleveland, but holy, they're fans of the Browns? Yeah. I had no idea. Maybe he's the one. We got the one in here. Man, I feel bad for him, dude. Holy.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's great.
Could you imagine? No, seriously, though, could you imagine being a Browns fan? Like, just misery.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I mean, just never, ever, ever winning ever anything.
Yeah, do you remember? I mean, think about how we felt this whole week after we lost, and imagine that for the last 19 years.
Yeah, just every week. Yeah, that's brutal, dude.
Sheer disappointment.
Just every single week, every single year, just man. I'm a little bit concerned with. I saw a statistic, Jimbo, that showed that, you know, I know that this team was moving to the run to a more pass centric offense, but they also mentioned they didn't want to stop. You know, they want to avoid their identity or get away from their identity, which is a run, a strong defense, a good run game. You know, you got to be able to control the line of scrimmage. But I saw 21% of their runs this year, Jimbo, have gone for zero or negative yards.
Ouch.
That is such a high number. Like, that yeah. just blows my mind. Now, I know they've had some big gains, too. They've had some successful runs. But when I saw that number, Jimbo, it got me thinking, like, back to 2019 when we never, ever had a negative run. And then you come out and, you know, one out of every, what, five or is a, I mean, that's shocking.
Yeah, that is shocking. I would have bet against that statistic being true just because of, you know, one, Lamar Jackson is always going to be one of our leading ball carriers, and he always has an incredible yards per carry average. And you add Gus into that as well. So you start to think, man, how could 21% of our carries be for zero or negative yards with guys like that that are carrying the football? That is a little scary. I mean, I don't know how much of that you can say it's the system or how much of that is simply the offensive line just not getting it done or the runners not having the vision. I'm interested to see Cole's thoughts too, but I have to guess that number improves over the year, the course of this season, especially if Gus is going to stay healthy and we get a guy like Tyler and even Ronnie back. I'm hopeful that, because at this point, two out of three of those games, right? I understand this correctly, two out of three of those games. So, you know, 66% of those games, Ronnie and Tyler Linderbaum haven't been in. I think that makes a big impact on the running game as well.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. But I mean,
that's still rough.
Regardless,
still
rough. I mean, now look, this is not, I want to clarify. I'm going to put the graphic that I saw up now, but I want to clarify it's running backs, not, so this doesn't include when Lamar takes
okay.
off.
Okay.
But still.
Fair. Then that's fair. Okay.
But still, yeah. I mean, that is still zero. I mean, you can see there's teams certainly like Philly, yeah. Should be no surprise, who have, you know, what's known to be the best offensive line in football. Only 5% of their runs do so. So that's still way too high of a number for me. 21%, yeah. Jimbo.
So are we like smack dab in the middle? We're a little above, like we're higher than the middle. Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
I'm just surprised from a Ravens team to ever see that number that high.
I agree. Something we've got to work on. We've got to figure this thing out. I mean, look, ultimately, I'm giving some grace to Monken and this team as an offense, giving them some time to work this thing out.
Part of it was like when they went heavy last week, they made it so incredibly obvious, like, that they were running the ball, that the team, I don't know if you noticed, like, but when they brought Falele in as the extra tackle, the Colts put 10 guys in the box, Jimbo. 10. There's only 11 guys on the field. They put 10 of them in the box because we made it so damn obvious that we were running. I just like us to see us be a little more deceptive when we are going to run and not just be so obvious. Like, I don't know.
Well, you know, week 12 in a major point of the game, Falele is going to make a catch. You realize that, right?
Is this all setting it up for that? Is that what it is?
Oh. Dude, go back and look at his old tape. Kid's a rugby player. He's got hands.
It's true.
He's got some hands. I'm saying.
It's true.
Monken's no idiot. Monken's no idiot.
Yeah.
We'll see. But either way, you're right. I mean, it was ridiculously telegraphed, right? Especially the second time in a row. Come on.
Yeah, they made it pretty obvious.
Laura Roten says, Deshaun Watson sucks. I don't think he is good at all. To be quite frank, and his moral ethic is horrific on top of it. I mean, yeah, all of it, right? I don't think he's a great football player, and I think he's a worse human being. I do believe in redemption, obviously, as a religious man myself, but I'm not here to...
It was so many, though, Jimbo.
Yeah. I'm not the one that's going to provide him with any type of redemption. So, like...
No.
You know what I mean?
Place.
Yeah, he's definitely not a Raven. Yeah.
No, he will never be. No, definitely not. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they gave him all that money because I think it's a waste of their money. And I think it's not going to lead to any big time success. So that's a very Cleveland Browns thing to do, if you ask me. Alara goes on to say their defense makes me nervous. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. They've been really good this year. But
well, I want to talk about this real quick.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, their corners, they have Denzel Ward, and who's their other corner? I was just talking about this, and now I'm blanking on his name. But Ward is
I was going to say, he's a junior, right? He's a junior. What's his name?
Yeah, gosh, dang it.
I'm pulling it up now. He's another draft pick, though, if I remember correctly. Here we go. I got it up now. So, yeah, they have, of course, Denzel Ward, who's their stud, and then Greg Newsome the second. So, yeah, he was a junior. Now he's a second.
But Newsome went to – was he TCU or was he Washington? He's one of those two, wasn't he?
I think he was Washington, if I remember correctly.
Washington. I get him confused because of a similar color scheme. My point is that if I'm not mistaken, I haven't watched a ton of Cleveland Browns, but I did watch the Monday night game. And what I know about Ward is that Ward, at least, I think of him really thriving in a man scenario, like a man defense instead of a zone. I feel like he's a really good man coverage guy. Mm-hmm. And – if you think about what type of a defense, if I'm a defensive coordinator, just me, I'm not a defensive coordinator, the last thing I want to do is play man against a guy like Lamar Jackson and exclude, you know, and heavy man, because I feel like you leave some massive lanes open. If one of your, you know, if the guy that's man is Lamar Jackson misses, that's a serious problem, right? Because then you don't have guys covering areas. You have guys covering men who are 40, 50 yards down the field, right? 30, 20, whatever. My point is that I think that, you know, Cole kind of talked about, I could be totally wrong off this. It's just my initial analysis. And of course, we'll break this down later in the week. My thought is that I feel like there are some things we do offensively that, you know, styles make fights. And I was concerned about the Cincinnati game with the power rush and the things like that with the new offensive line coming out there. I don't have that concern with their defense. I'm not crazy nervous about it. And they're also the Browns.
Yeah, they are the Browns. But I, you know, Zadarius and Miles, they got me nervous.
Serious pass rush. You're right. I mean, those boys
they
are.
Got me. Yeah, they can. And then, you know, they can run at linebacker, you know, which makes you nervous about Lamar. And he, you know, I think he was injured by KOA once when he was trying to escape the pocket. So, yeah, that kind of always makes me a little bit nervous. But, yeah, it's going to be a fun game, man. Either way, look, I think what we've learned from the last or first 3 weeks is that if the Ravens show up, they can look really good. And if they shoot themselves in the foot, they can look really, really bad. Excuse me. So let's just hope that they show up and let's hope that they get maybe some reinforcements. I'm not expecting them to get everybody back. I mean, that's pretty clear. But one guy, can they get like OBJ? Like,
can I ask you a question about this?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I ask you a question about OBJ? These are not accusations. I want to make this clear, okay, about who he is as a person. I don't know him. But for me, I'm just thinking about who I am, right? I think it's impossible, if we're all being honest, to know if you already got 95% of your money in that check, in that yearly, you know, that 15 out of 18 million is already guaranteed or whatever it ended up being, to sit back and be like, man, I really need to think about me before I get my, so I can get my next paycheck, right? Like, do you know what I'm saying? So, like, That gets me just a little bummed out to think like that has to be in every human's head. Think, all right, I got to play this right. I don't need to rush back. I need to make sure I protect me, which I get. That's all like sensible things to do. But it also like bums me out to think, dang, I think he's going to be extra precautious about the ankle. Yeah. I get it. I just want him back out on the field. Yeah. You know, I just want him back out on the field.
And I would be too, Jimbo, but also say that he also knows that the better he plays, the more money he'll make in his next deal. So I think there is a balance to what he has to do. But ultimately, I just want him to be healthy and out there, because if he's not healthy, I'd rather him sit, because I don't want to see him out there 80% and then worsen that injury or get a different injury because he's compensating. Nope. I don't want to do that.
The only guy I want back is, can we get Marlon Humphrey back on the football field, please?
Be nice. It'd be nice.
What is happening? Have you heard anything about Marlon?
Nothing, even though he's always on his podcast talking, but he hasn't given us much. We did see a tweet from Ardarius. Looks like he got surgery today. Shout out to Ardarius. I guess it's a season long ender, even though they haven't even really said that. They're kind of, the tight-lippedness of the Ravens is kind of frustrating at times, and I think we're at that time right now. Hello, we got the yappers. I love Jay's face when that happens. It is awesome. I love to see it. So frustrated. So much.
Just got the mute button on.
Yeah. Hey, I'm hoping Cole's going to be joining us here in any minute here. DK, maybe if you could send him a message, see if I know, you know, sometimes he gets hung up with the little ones, but Jimbo, so you're not ready to jump. Okay. Something.
Go ahead. Broke. Sorry.
You're not ready to jump off the Justin Tucker bandwagon, because I saw someone say in our comments section, after the last game, that he was there at the game. The kick would have been short from 51, he said. And he said he thinks this is the start of a slow decline from Justin Tucker's leg strength.
Yeah, right. That's ridiculous. That's asinine. Like, I don't understand that at all. I don't get that theory. The guy, what was it? In the Cincinnati game, he hit a 70-plus yarder in warmups. Did it happen? Was it just a precipitous drop in 7 days?
I will say this, Jimbo, to kind of further your point. Justin Tucker from 60-plus is 2 for 9. The next 9 most accurate kickers combined from 60-plus are 2 for 7. So
yeah, so he's doing okay.
He's doing pretty good. You know, he's
he's fine. Plus, if for some reason his leg strength is weakening, just get in the gym. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, get I don't the gym.
Or get like, it closer, for crying out loud. How about right? The offense get like, the ball a little closer?
Yeah, this is the same thing. This happens with Steph Curry. He misses it from the logo, and people are like, oh, Steph is losing it. He missed it from 45 feet. Yeah, I know. Steph missed it from 45. Whoop-dee-doo. Like, no put it at 30 feet. And see,
yeah.
Yeah, you put Steph at 30 feet compared to everyone else, it's not even fair. You know, so, yeah, you can't blame anything on Justin Tucker. Now, Justin Tucker will take blame upon himself, but the team has no reason to put any blame on Justin Tucker, in my opinion.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Now, one guy who didn't get any blame, who deserves no blame, Kyle Hamilton had his coming out party, I think, to some people who were still kind of letting him fly under the radar a little bit. Jadeveon Clowney was asked about Kyle Hamilton's performance, and he said he calls him the Avatar, a 6'4" safety who can run, who can hit. He says, I like playing with him. He's a smart guy, and he's going to bring it. I mean, how impressed were you with what you saw out of Kyle Hamilton? I mean, it's the full package that he brings. It's like, where this guy is effective. It seemed like no matter where you put him, but it looks like he might be best down near the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. I mean, he's just – so in college he looked physical, but my concern about Kyle was always the – he had this big background in basketball, right? And we all know, Glenn, guys that play exclusively – like they exclusively play basketball, not the biggest fans of physicality.
No.
You know, especially – anyway, so – I worried a bit about his excitement, and you talk about this, like playing even the middle linebacker position, you have to welcome and embrace physicality. But like Kyle thrives in it. He loves it. He welcomes it. And he, man, I mean, just the dude, when he tackles you, you're going down and he's excited about it. He gets juiced by it. Yeah. So I love it. I'm so excited to continue to see the progression of Kyle Hamilton. That is definitely one absolute bright spot from this game we can take away. I'm looking forward to see how they continue to create different ways around what he can do for him to impact the game. This game, it was pressuring the quarterback and, just like you said, playing around the line of scrimmage. But I think there will be other ways that McDonald will continue to deploy his skill set in a way that is very impactful to the game. Now, Sean Pisker says, I remember after the Miami game last year, I was calling him a bust. Man, was I wrong? Dude's a stud. Sean, trust me, man. There was a lot of people worried and concerned and ready to go there. Was it the Miami game that he got froze in the end zone?
I know he looked bad and he got benched.
Yeah, but look, I mean, you can either win or you can learn, right? That's really up to you. I mean,
there you go. Yeah.
So he just learned. Yeah.
He learned a lot that day, and it certainly looks like you know, he You all right, Jimbo?
I'm here.
know. Okay, there we go. All right, there we go. Okay.
I'm here.
All right.
I'm here.
All right. I didn't know if I couldn't tell if I was cutting you off or what was going on. But yeah, I mean, Kyle Hamilton looks like he's going to be a stud here for many years to come. Also, you know, is again, we bashed on the we were rough on the team in a lot of areas, but I do want to take some time to give some celebrations. While we talked about Kyle Hamilton, now I want to talk about the linebackers. I thought Pat Queen and Roquan Smith were back to top form. I mean, Pat Queen's really played exceptional football all year. I watched another play that Cole broke down. I hope everything's okay. I'm kind of disappointed he's not on here yet, but he broke down a play where basically it was a motion pre-snap and it caused Roquan and Pat Queen to kind of have to switch their responsibilities on the fly.
Oh yeah.
And it led to a Roquan pass breakup. And it just, man, I mean, these guys are so in tune with each other from across the field. They can make calls, make changes, react on this in the split second. Because as you know, I mean, if you're a split second behind, a split second late in this league, a guy's wide open. So it's just amazing how good those two guys are at playing next to each other. It's going to be a shame, man, because there's no way the Ravens are going to be able to afford both these guys. And it's going to be a real shame to have to watch Pat Queen leave, because he is having a fantastic season. And I think he's just going to keep getting better all year.
Yeah. Hasn't he had double digit sacks every game?
Double digit tackles.
Wow. Double digit sacks would be insane.
That would be
double digit tackles. Yeah, every game. I mean, he's got to be on pace to have the most tackles of the year. And, yeah, their communication, they have a synergy, right, between them that exists that has just been really incredible to watch, where they're mutually benefiting one another now. And it's exciting. I know that, like you said, most likely he's going to be out of here next year. And I think that that's also the case. But who knows what type of deal he could be, certainly just playing himself out of any contention of staying here with Baltimore. But you just never know what's going to happen. You just never do. So, you know, you keep your hopes up, and maybe he hangs around. Loves playing with Roquan. He's got his good buddy, but I also get not wanting to turn down a bag. I mean, I wouldn't expect him to do that either. So, as Modus and Otis says, Marlon is having a McChicken. I'm not going to lie. I'm not a big fan. You know what? I'm just going to skip the comment I was about to say.
No,
just gonna move on from it. Nope, sure. I'm not gonna say it.
All right,
I'm not gonna say it.
Tongue. This is a mature version of Jimbo.
This is.
He's very mature. But hey, I want to ask you, and this is I'll ask you after Laura's comment here. It's kind of a big question I'm about to throw on you. So I'll start with Laura's comment. She said, "I love Lamar playing the press conference when he did the sideways smile about his throws." Yeah, a little smirk. You know, a little, look, I love Lamar Jackson. He didn't have the best game, but also if you really look at the tape, he didn't get a lot. He didn't get a lot of help in those big times where it looked like he had terrible plays. It was really a breakdown all around him. It wasn't necessarily, you know, all on him. He didn't play it perfectly. Those couple plays, especially the ones where he turned the ball over or had the sack that you just can't take. It was a failure all around him. But Jimbo, I kind of want to ask you about, do you ever see it being like, do you think it'll always be the case where you can't have honest conversations about Lamar Jackson and his play? And that anytime you bring up anything in a form of that might be considered a criticism or a critique, that you're a basher or you don't like, do you see another player where it's so polarizing where you can't make any comment or you're a basher?
Yeah. To me, that's the most polarizing player in the NFL. I think that's a great question, Glenn. You know, it's funny because I have my fair students with talking to people about the polarizing things. Oh, what's going on here? Oh, no. No.
I hear you, Jimbo.
And they didn't like it.
No, I heard you, Jimbo. Oh, man. I wish we could hear the insight from Jimbo Slimbo. But as you can see, we can still hear you, though, Jimmy, if you can hear me. Oh, man. I'm so disappointed. There we go. Okay. But it's just frustrating because, you know, it just seems like if you make any comment, you know, about him that, you know, you, but I will say when you look at the film and not just the broadcast view, even that incompletion, and I just wish Cole was on here because he did such a good job of breaking down. That was a group failure. First of all, it wasn't a great play call. He runs a four verticals. We only need 10 yards. He runs four verticals with maybe a deep hook route that's like a 10 or 15 yard hook route that just took too long to develop. The offensive line did not do a good job of picking up a blitz that looked like a three-man rush turned into a six-man rush. Mark Andrews, who his guy was the blitzer, and the entire middle of the field vacated when all those guys came after Lamar. Mark Andrews never turned his head. He continued to run up the seam, did not look for the ball. Lamar Jackson literally had nowhere to throw the ball. All four guys were running stretch routes. Nobody looked back at any point for him to throw the ball hot. So he couldn't get rid of the ball. And now when he was scrambling to the left, maybe at that point, or even with Mark not looking at him, should he throw it in the back, into the ground and behind his feet? Yeah, he should have. So that it's not like he deserves no blame, but to say, like, there was nobody open. Certainly nowhere for him to go with the ball. I mean, there was a guy open, Mark Andrews, but he wasn't looking for the ball. So even if the ball, if he would have thrown it dead on target, would have hit him in the back, in his back, and he would have just been run up the field. So, yeah, Lamar Jackson can't take that sack, but I don't think the play should have been called at four verticals with maybe a deep hook somewhere on the right side that just took too long to develop. The offensive line, Kevin Zeitler, to be specific, missed his block, which caused Melvin Gordon to try and slide over, who looked terrible trying to pick up the guy that Zeitler missed because he wasn't truly in position for that guy because he was trying to get in position for the guy he was supposed to be blocking. Then Mark Andrews doesn't look. So it was just a combination of failures, starting with the coaching staff and the play call, and then with the offensive line not picking up the block, then Mark Andrews not recognizing the blitz, and then Lamar Jackson not throwing it in the dirt after he recognized that Mark Andrews wasn't looking. Like, it wasn't just one guy. It was a bunch of guys who dropped the ball on the last play. And it was kind of like that for all the bad plays. If you look at the tape, it was one guy or another messing up every play. I mean, look, on one play, there would have been a massive, massive hole opened up on the left side. Had John Simpson gotten his block. Oh, I'm sorry. That was when Morgan Moses doesn't get his block. It's just like if one guy breaks down in football, that's why they call it the ultimate team sport, especially on the offensive line. If one guy doesn't do his job, it can destroy the whole play. And of course, typically the guys blamed are the guys with the ball in their hands, the running backs or the quarterbacks, but it's not always as simple as it's the guy with the ball's fault.
Yep. I agree with you. Sorry. Speaking of failure on all sides, that's apparently what I'm going through here. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Yeah, I can.
Okay, awesome. No, can I answer your question real quick, or is that train left the station?
No, you can, and then we'll get to Chris's comment. Yeah.
All right, cool. No, all I was going to say is I have a bit of a history of talking to people about polarizing subjects. So one of the things I try and do with Lamar is find things that we both like about Lamar and then start to weave in things that I might believe that I know they don't believe, which is the only way, the closest I've come to, like, having a true conversation about him. Because if not, it's just so weird. I don't understand what it is about people hate him or people love him, you know, the style of his game. And this is what I'll say about, you talked about the play that went wrong and there were some moments, Lamar didn't have a perfect game. But if you actually look at the tape, everyone can say that, or anyone can say that wants to, but we're also not in contention for that game if Lamar Jackson isn't our quarterback in that game. I firmly believe that because he made plays. Those two rushing touchdowns, how many other quarterbacks make those plays? And all the other times where he was able to use his feet to go from a – remember that play where it was a defensive holding and he was tackled in the backfield and he turns out and he turns that into a first down? Yep. How many times did he turn a negative into a positive in a situation where, let's just say Jared Goff, a guy ranked higher than him in the top 100, would have absolutely got obliterated in the backfield, right? And it would have been a punt. Name any other guy that stands back there, right? So, I mean, there's so many situations where I don't think we would have been in contention in that game with the way other people were playing around him without Lamar Jackson. So I'm not here to say that he's perfect. He needs a lot to improve on. He knows that. But no, I don't think there's ever going to be a day where people will honestly be able to look at Lamar until his career is over and talk about him. And I think it was a lot like that with Vic as well. Now, Vic had a whole nother dimension to it with the off the field stuff that Lamar simply doesn't have. But I think when there's something new, Glenn, people are scared of it. Just is what it is, you know?
Yeah, Chris says, terrible play calling. Harbs has too much input. It looked like Greg Roman play calling or calling plays similar to game one.
And I think that's an unverifiable statement. I think it was terrible play calling, Chris, but I don't think that's something that you can just say as a fact, right? Because I also don't think Monken as a vet coach, like, dude, Monken is a G. Like, Monken isn't just going to sit there and get pushed around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can see how he talks to the media if they get a bit lippy to him. He got a little frustrated, I think it was last week, when he talked about the job of a coordinator. So I don't think he's just going to sit there and get pushed around. He's going to stand and I think that's how it should be as a coordinator. I don't think Harbs is in the business of calling plays for the offensive coordinator. I don't think he ever has been. I don't think he will be.
Yeah, as far as too much input, like Jimmy said, who knows what the input was? I mean, I'm sure he does say things like, hey, I'd like to see a run on this, or like in that late game situation, hey, I'd like to see some running plays here. And maybe to that degree, he had input that made us go more conservative than Monken may have wanted to. We have no idea.
Yeah.
We have no idea. Absolutely no idea. So, I don't even know how to, I don't. Oh, Justin, shout out. You know what? I messed up. I didn't shout Justin out last game. He was at the stadium, big Colts fan. And look, he was just as surprised as us that they won. I'll say it now because I was talking some crap to him before the game and he wasn't even talking back. He was laying down and taking it. Okay. So look, yeah, they won. Shout out to Grocery Outlet, by the way, owner operator, Grocery Outlet. Shout out Justin Maynard. Look, you know you were damn surprised up in that box, that suite you were in. You know, and like, that's something that really pissed me off. I would have liked it to hear that he was out in the elements. This jerk was in a suite too, so he didn't even have to worry about sitting in the rain. Justin was there to watch his Colts win. Dang.
Yeah, well, we could have lost to worse teams.
That's true. Like this team coming up this week. Massey says, rough power rankings. Which teams impressed you more than the Ravens, both offense and defense? Well, in the AFC, I mean, you got to say the Dolphins. I mean, they put up 70 points and set the record for yards. They had 10 touchdowns offensively, Jimbo. 10.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And then the NFC, absolutely insane. The Cardinals. Cardinals impressed the hell out of me. They destroyed the Cowboys. They put up 28 points. That's my team in the NFC.
Just Dak being Dak, I guess, right?
Dude, Micah Parsons, he just couldn't handle the Josh Dobbs effect. You know what I mean?
Oh, my gosh.
Marquise Brown had a tutty.
Yeah, well, good for Marquise. yeah. What else we got here? I guess, let's talk about the competition winner.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. DK, sorry. Wait, just private
chat. Do you rank the Ravens? Is that what you said?
Oh.
Yeah, where do you rank the Ravens, Jimbo? Because they got us at 10 right now. Last power rankings I saw, we dropped 4 spots. We were 6th, I believe, if I remember correctly.
I think
correctly.
10's fair. I mean, we had a terrible outing. Like, it's not like we did ourselves any favors. And we also, you know, we lost a few more guys. I think 10's okay right now. Do I think we have a team that's better than a top 10 football team? Yeah, I think we have the potential to make a deep run in the playoffs. But I think right now, as it stands, I think 10 is fair. I can't be mad at it. We just lost to the Colts with a backup quarterback.
Yeah, well said. And we're banged up.
Yeah.
And that's got to impact the rankings. You can't rank the Ravens as if they're healthy. You got to rank them as they are, and they're pretty beat up right now. But hopefully reinforcements are on the way. Chris says, then why are we making the same mistakes with different coordinators on both sides of the ball? Well, look, mistakes are going to happen. If you look at any team with the magnifying glass that you look at your favorite team being the Ravens, then you're going to see shortcomings on every roster, on every team. I mean, that's just how it is. Now, the clock management stuff, that's on Harbs. That is on Harbs. You know, that there's no doubt that that's on him. As far as the play calling, I can't imagine. I can't hang that on the neck of John Harbaugh unless I know for sure that he's in his ear going, hey, I need three straight runs on this one, Todd.
Because
if not, then it's on Todd or it's on the players for not executing the plays.
And talk to any coordinator that's worked for John. They'll tell you that one of their favorite things about John is that he gives them the space to be themselves.
Yeah.
I just don't see that being John's MO or the way that he operates. Just that simple. That's not what he does.
Yep.
Never has been. And once again, he ain't changing it. Just that simple. I think the way that John works with his coordinator, once again, all unverifiable except what John has given us, is he's talked about giving his guys the space, but really it's just about, okay, tell me about, you know, when you talk to a guy, you sit down with him, you talk about what your schematics are, like what you believe about football, what you believe about offense, right? So when we're in this situation, what do you see? And if I don't understand what you see, then tell me why you see that way. I don't think John's against – I think those are the conversations he likes having to get a better understanding of. You know what I mean? He's not just simply a dictator, right? It's so, yeah.
No, but I love Chris White. Seems like an emotional fan as well. I love it.
Yeah,
I
those are the best ones, man. The best fans, man. You know? Nothing like an ambivalent fan.
Yeah, man. I want a fan who's ready to just throw his jacket away at the end of the game, but then the next day he's rocking it back out to the store. You know what I mean? Right.
Now, not the kid that I've seen on social media that goes absolutely insane. We don't need all that. But,
I'm not familiar, but.
Anyway, he goes absolutely nuts.
Does he? Yeah, don't do anything too crazy. It's just right, a game.
But like you be upset, you know?
Yeah.
Bring your heart to the game, right? Like that's what it's about, man.
Absolutely. But let's announce our winner of this week's competition, the fan version, as we all know and expected. Glenn won. Myself, I won the competition this week. Mm-hmm. I don't think that comes as any surprise to anyone. Mm-hmm. But let's
see.
The
only thing I want to happen is when it's not you next week, just make sure you mention that person as many times as you mention yourself winning. Okay.
Look, there's not going to be any other fan, any other players winning. You're not winning
on the accident, the accidental scenario.
All right. Hypothetical. Okay.
This crazy hypothetical. That's wild. Very, it's highly unlikely, right? I mean, it just is. But if it's so happens to come to pass.
Okay. Got you.
You guys heard it here. Okay. DK did. Sorry, Glenn. You were in the middle of announcing.
Dude, how is it with the two tiebreakers, including closest to the pin? How could we possibly end with two winners?
Yeah.
So I need to know.
DK, did they have the exact. Okay. DK, can we bring you on and you explain this to us?
They were the exact.
Is that okay?
Wrong. They were wrong the exact amount.
Can DK break this down real quick as the official referee? Is that all right, DK?
All right. I can do that.
Talk to us about how this happened.
So we only had contestants with three out of four correct, three out of the four over-unders. And then the two that won got the first tiebreaker correct. Mm-hmm. And then after that, the correct pin number of yards for the Ravens was 364. And so one of these guys guessed 395 and the other one guessed 333, which is exactly 31 yards from that middle point.
Dang. It's that just that insane. Close, ladies and gentlemen. It gets down to that granular, and yet we have two winners. Shout out to Brendan Steele, 1147, and Real Black 21.
That's right.
This week's winners. Guys, don't forget to claim your prize. You simply message us on any of the social media handles you see in the top corner of the screen there, or comment once this live is over.
Yeah.
But don't comment once this live is over, because then you'll be giving everyone your home address. So definitely only DM us.
Right.
Give us your home address as well as your shirt size, and you'll get some swag.
Yeah, and the really cool thing is that, of course, this is brought to you and made possible by our partner, BetUS. Make sure to check out BetUS. They are the absolute OGs in the sports betting scene. The link is in the description. And the really cool thing is that not only do they give you the largest match in deposit at $2,500 being the ceiling, they also add a cherry on top by giving you 125% match. So that's a complete match, dollar for dollar, plus a quarter for every dollar, following that. So go check it out. BetUS. Go with what you know, like Glenn loves to say. I love that. Stick to your Ravens if that's what you want to do, if you know more than that. But they got prop bets, in-game bets, pre-game bets, and then they got season-long bets. Check out all of it. BetUS is our partner in crime when it comes to sports gambling. So go check it out and have some fun, man. Make yourself some fun money. Use your fun money to make some more fun money.
That's it. That's all you got to do. I mean, it's just that easy.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, I love the props. You know, I love all the quick stuff. You know, the little fun. I always say this: it's more fun to root for overs than it is to root for unders.
Yeah, that's just like my philosophy. For people to play bad.
Yeah, exactly, and that goes literally across all sports. Like it's always more fun to root for scores than to root against scores. So yep. I would always say, take the over because it's more fun. You know, it's really, no matter what you're doing, player bets, prop bets, full game bets, season bets, take the over, root for the scores, root for victories, whatever it is. And basketball, let me tell you, it's way more fun in basketball. Let me tell you how much it sucks rooting for the under in a basketball game and watching threes just rain, dude. It'll break your heart. It'll rip it right out of your chest.
That being said, we do have Cole Jackson on. We are excited. I will say this. Unfortunately, Glenn, I'm going to have to leave.
I understand. I'll take care of me and Cole. I apologize.
I've been more of a liability tonight anyway. Let's be honest. Right.
Dude, like, let's just hope issues are fixed. It's all good, man. It's all good.
I appreciate it. So thank you so much. Apologies for the issues. We'll get it worked out, but I had a blast tonight. Appreciate you guys coming on as always. Rip Brooks Robinson. Shout out to his family. Thoughts and prayers go there. Thank you, Cole, for coming on. DK, thank you so much for all you do. I'm out of here, guys. Great job tonight.
Yeah, appreciate it. All right. Well, without further ado, from the YouTube channel Road Graders, our buddy, our guy, friend of the show, Cole Jackson.
You guys are going to fire me soon. What's going on, everyone? What's up, chat? I'm so, so, so incredibly sorry. My little one was fighting the bedtime and I didn't have my phone, so I couldn't let the boys know. So my bad, everybody. What's up, chat? Good to see everybody. I'm finally here. Glenn, how's it going, brother?
Oh, it's going well, man. I'm glad to see you. I'm glad to see everything's okay. I was a little I thought it had something to do with the little ones, as you know, I have a young son, you know, all us parents get it, but I'm just glad to hear it's nothing more serious, of course.
No, just a fussy baby.
understood. But I love the breakdown you did. But you did a lot. But specifically, you know, the late game collapse that we saw from the Ravens. But I got a bunch of questions here, and I'm going to get to that one in due time. But I got to ask you a couple things first and foremost. Kyle Van Noy is why everyone's saying he's on his way. He's going to be signed here. Confirmed. In the very near future. Okay, confirmed. We'll be here. So my first question, Cole, is what does he bring and how does he kind of fit into this group? But my second would be, does this mean that we might not be seeing Adafe Owe or Ajabo or Bowser for quite some time?
So I can tell you right now that Owe was still in a walking boot for a week after the initial injury. So he was still wearing a walking boot this weekend. So I would say that is not a good sign. David Ojabo he's definitely, I would expect him to possibly miss a practice, maybe be limited, but I think he's closer to playing out of the three of them than anyone. I think the biggest thing with Van Noy is just, he's not in, like, I think he was flying to Baltimore today. He's got to do all of the, let's call it logistics, paperwork, like that sort of thing tomorrow. I don't even think he'll be able to get on the practice field tomorrow. So will he go into a game with two practices? Now, the question is, what does he bring? What had me so intrigued with Kyle Van Noy when they looked at him earlier in the offseason was very similar skill set to what Tyus Bowser brings you, plays that Sam role really well. Has a little bit of pass rush juice, but, you know, sets a strong edge and can drop in coverage and do a lot of the versatile things Bowser did. So the first thing I thought of was more the impact of that has on Bowser versus the others. Cause I mean, Jeremiah Moon played a ton of snaps. It's not that he played bad by any means. I think that was his first, regular season NFL game. So I'm not going to, you know, doo-doo on the guy, but he's not a starting caliber guy. He's not a guy you want out there for, you know, 60, 70% snaps. Whereas Kyle Van Noy is a veteran. He'll be able to take on that Sam role opposite Jadeveon Clowney, who's been in the rush role. So that's really what I'm expecting to see there. I think he brings a skill set that fits what Mike McDonald wants to do. But I would say, personally, I think it's a bad sign for getting Tyus Bowser back soon. But I also will not, like, that's not based on anything I've heard. I haven't heard a single update on Bowser. To be completely honest with you guys, I don't even know what his injury is. Like, I can't even get that information out of anyone. So I'm not sure what that is, but I will tell you, I did hear earlier today around noon that Van Noy was coming, the full intention to sign him. Earlier in the offseason, he was looking for about what Justin Houston got, which was a one-year, $6 million deal. That deal was not something the Ravens wanted to go for. They brought Clowney in for much less. Now, obviously, as you know, time goes on, the market drops. They finally found a fit for the dollars and cents. So Van Noy will come in.
Yeah, it's me and Jim. We were talking about, like, in week one of the preseason, if you told us Clowney and Van Noy would be the starting edges in week four, we'd be like, you're out of your mind. But that looks like that's how it is. Sean Pister, hey, Mandrews. I mean, Cole. So, the lookalike is—it's just never going to escape you, Cole. I mean, it's always going to be with you.
I wonder how Mark feels being compared to me.
He probably goes, "I'm not compared to him. He's compared to me." 100%. Is what he's saying.
I might be older, but he is bigger and stronger than I am.
I got to get your take on the O-line. You know, they got such glowing reviews after the Cincinnati game, able to hold them to zero sacks on Lamar Jackson, despite having two backups in there. What was your take on them this week, their second week without their left tackle and without their center?
Yeah, so I think the general theme with the offensive line this week was kind of Lamar was under pressure all day. So what I did is I went back and looked at all 38 dropbacks to take, like, I wanted to break down exactly where the pressure came from, who was letting up the pressure, how many pressures there were. I counted 11 pressures, two of which were unblocked pressures, which is just defensive scheme pressures, like Kyle Hamilton sacks, for example. Those are unblocked pressures. They just overloaded the line, and the Ravens D-line executed perfectly to get Kyle Hamilton as a free rusher. So that was 9 of the 38 snaps were pressures allowed by the offensive line. Kevin Zeitler allowed 3 sacks, McCary 1 sack, and Mustafa, I charged with a sack on the low snap. So I think here's what I would say. There was not a high quantity of pressure, but the problem was when there was pressure, it was high quality. And what that means is it's ending in a sack. So it's not, you know, it wasn't a bunch of hurries where Lamar just has to speed up and scramble to throw the ball. It was, he's getting hit. He's, you know, getting guys in his face, getting the ball knocked out, that sort of thing. So I don't want to, you know, minimize, you know, he's got to be better with the ball. Absolutely no disagreement there. But his offensive line can't allow sacks. So, I mean, that's how I would describe the offensive line play. Not a high quantity of pressure, but a high quality of pressure, which is not good as well.
Yeah. Let's hope that those guys aren't too far. I mean, I guess, like, do you think Mustafa and McCary were like, do you think it would have been a whole lot different had it been Linderbaum and Stanley in there?
I didn't think McCary, the problem with McCary was he allowed, I charted as a sack, which was just the sack he allowed was a clean beat, bad rep, like nothing there, right? Like there's nothing to defend. He didn't get enough depth in his vertical set and he just got bent. Like there's nothing there. It's a bad, bad loss. The second pressure he allowed was the one where Simpson and McCary both got beat and Lamar spun out of it and ran for like 13 yards. So that should have been a sack. So I guess, you know, would Stanley have allowed sacks? Probably not. But, you know, I also don't think like that's 36 to 38 reps that I saw that weren't horrible, like not by any means. It was pretty average left tackle play, which average left tackle play, you know, 36 to 38 reps, if you're winning, you're probably in pretty good shape. So again, it's just the two losses being bad losses, it sticks in people's brains, right? You get that in your head. He got beat all day. Tape doesn't show him getting beat all day. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, let's get into before we get into the late game offense, I got to get your quick take on what you saw from Kyle Hamilton, because I don't know. I know most fans in Baltimore are well aware of who he is, but I think it was a bit of a coming out party to some people. to get a load of what this guy can bring. Do you want to see? Did we see a change in his role in the last couple weeks after the Marcus Williams being officially not going to be here, and then also with our Darius Washington going down? Did we see a big change in his role from the first 2 weeks to last week?
No, you just nailed it. It wasn't so much Marcus Williams going out that changed his role significantly. He was still playing. They basically brought Geno Stone in to be more of the free safety and left Kyle Hamilton in his role. But what we saw this week was him basically playing that slot role like what we saw last year. And they had Daryl Worley playing back there with Geno Stone. So I think they really didn't trust Arthur Millett, and I don't blame them. He's not very good to come in there and replace our Darius Washington. They really wanted to get Kyle Hamilton back in that slot role. Especially with how much the Colts align Michael Pittman up there, that's a good matchup with a bigger physical DB versus a smaller slot corner. So it was really what I see being the big shift was losing our Darius Washington, getting Kyle Hamilton in the slot.
Yeah, and he was uncheckable
everywhere.
Holy smokes! If we see, that we see the return of Marlon Humphrey and we see some corners get back, do you still think Kyle Hamilton will remain in this role going forward, even if they get healthier at the cornerback position?
I think it'll be matchup based. Like, I think if they're going to play bigger physical slot receivers, I think you will see it. Like, I would imagine against the Bengals again, you might see that to match up when they put Chase and Higgins in the slot. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like our Darius is coming back, right? John said he's out for the year. But you know, when Marlon's back, that might be something they do where they, you know, reduce Marlon inside. I don't think they're overly disappointed with how Darby and Stevens have played. I don't think they've been world beaters by any means, but I also don't think they've been liabilities. So there's probably going to be a number of reps where you see Marlon coming inside, playing that slot role like 2 years ago, and putting Hamilton back in the open field. But then, you know, that's what Mike McDonald, I think, does so well. He really finds positions for players to be in a good position to succeed, right? And so you saw it all day. It's, you know, he played a lot in the slot, but he also played some deep. So I think they're going to just adjust based on the matchup.
Gotcha. Now, I want to give you an opportunity to let fans know what you saw in those last couple possessions when the Ravens had an opportunity to get into field goal range to win the game. They got really close, seemingly moved the ball quickly to midfield, but then absolutely stalled. So what kind of broke down those last couple drives and specifically the play where Lamar took the huge sack?
Yeah, let's start there because that's obviously the biggest one to discuss. And, you know, so my issue is every time I've explained this is people go, you're making excuses for Lamar. And I'm not. You can't take a sack there, period. End of discussion. You cannot take that sack no matter what. But if the question is what happened on that play, the slot corner that was over top of Mark Andrews blitzed. And he did a late blitz, so where he's lined up with Mark. And once Mark released, he came down and blitzed. What Lamar did was look right up into the pressure where the blitz came from, which is what you're supposed to do. When you're getting pressured with either a late blitz or any blitz for that matter, you throw into the pressure because a guy's vacating that space, right? Mm-hmm. And Mark never turned back to the ball. He ran a seam directly up. He actually ran a little bit of an in cut and then continued on a seam. He never curled into the ball. So basic, and the other three routes that were on that, because they had a six-man protection, they had a three-man trip set here, one man on the boundary. It was a four verts, and the middle slot guy was Andrews, Zay, and then I forget which receiver was on the boundary of the trip side. He eventually did a curl 10 yards downfield, but when Lamar dropped back and the pressure came, all Lamar saw was the back of four purple jerseys. So again, you can't take that sack, throw it at their feet, do whatever you got to do. But it's also up to his receivers to know that they're the hot read. So as soon as he releases, you turn in. And we actually saw Mark Andrews at Chris Just Joking on Twitter has a play where the Colts did the exact same thing, late blitz from the slot that was over top of Mark Andrews. And Mark just turned in after 5 yards. Simple pitch and catch. That's how you beat these blitzes. You can't just run four verts into it. You're never going to have enough time with a blitz. But also at the same time, Kevin Zeitler completely missed EJ Speed, the linebacker. Melvin Gordon stepped up a little late. They got beat. But again, So there was bad pass protection, a bad, you know, route, call it bad route by the tight end and Mark Andrews. But that doesn't mean that Mark, that Lamar can still take that sack. So I'm not saying he's exonerated, not saying any of that. I'm just, the question is what happened? That's what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. And look, I was bashing. I mean, I was on here screaming, you cannot take that sack. And I still say that, but after the tape comes out, you see that he, first of all, there was no chance for a completion. The best scenario is him throwing it in the dirt at the feet of a receiver, but that's the best scenario. And of course that's what he should have done, but let's not act like, oh, if he would have gotten the ball out, this guy would have caught it and ran for 20 yards. There was no opportunity to do that. Now, what's your take? I saw Ryan Clark. He gets on ESPN. He says, look, I'm not seeing anything innovative, which is quite contradictory to what he said the week before, but he says, this looks like the same old Ravens, Cole. This team doesn't look any different. And then Shannon Sharp went on to say, I think he used the word uniqueness, or I can't remember the exact word. I think he made up a word. But they're saying they're not seeing much difference from this year's Ravens offense to last year. So a guy who's seen all the tape, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I don't really get it. I mean, there's some very tangible differences. Like they obviously play a lot lighter. You see a lot more 11 personnel. Like the numbers are very clear about this. They ran a league low, like I think it was 39% 11 personnel this year. It's around 64. That's a, just based on how they line up the offense is tangibly different. You see way less Pat Ricard. You see way less tight end sets. They're playing a lot more three wide receiver sets. I think this game was a little bit different because they didn't have OBJ. They didn't run as much 11 personnel. They really wanted to be able to run the ball with the pass game struggling. So they did play some heavier sets, but Ricard still didn't play like all game like he used to last year. So when you, what I think they're referring to is Greg Roman loved four verts. He loved to push receivers downfield. In the way he designed his offense, he wanted to use the run game to basically spread out horizontally. So that's why they ran the veer concept, because you've got to bring up extra guys. You'd see those safeties, those slots coming up and spreading the defense. So the best way to beat a spread horizontal defense is to go vertical over them. And that was basically what Greg Roman wanted to go for. And so you did see a little bit of that on Sunday, but I mean, that's just picking a couple plays and saying it looks the same. I think what looked similar was just poor execution. You know, it was just, you know, guys missing reads, fumbles, that sort of thing. Like that's what looks similar to me. But in terms of the offensive design, I don't even think it's really that close. Like it's very clearly a different offense. These same guys that are saying that were praising the creativity. And I forget which analyst came out and said it, but they basically said that, you know, it's going to pay off in the long run because you got to go through these bumps to implement this new offense. And once, you know, there was that, the one play before they got Tucker in field goal range on the Aguilar catch. Mm-hmm. There was the play before that was the incompletion to Duvernay. Mm. Really good example. They basically just ran the four verts with the inside slot running that fading in route, and Lamar eventually targeted Duvernay. That was very Greg Roman-esque. That play felt like something I'd see from Greg Roman in a must-pass situation. But what looked similar to last year was Lamar got the ball out late. It wasn't thrown with anticipation, and it gave time for that inside slot C or slot corner to make a play on Duvernay and disrupt the ball. So things like that are happening. And that's just, you know, as this offense gets implemented, as they see looks, they play plays over and over again, things are going to get a little bit quicker. I would say the biggest thing is Lamar needs to play with a little bit better anticipation, get that ball out and start leading receivers a little bit more. But I also think he did a really good job of that against Cincinnati. So it really comes down to consistency. And I think that's the problem with trying to identify the one thing that's hurting them. It's not necessarily that they can't do it. It's not that Lamar can't make those throws. It's that he's got to do it consistently.
Yeah, I think watching film of football has got to be, especially as like a coach, has got to be the most frustrating thing, Cole, because you pointed it out. And guys, you guys should really check out the breakdowns Cole has over at Road Graders on YouTube, because you do a great job of pointing out, like, it doesn't matter if 10 guys do their job perfectly. If one guy screws up their job in football, the play is toast and it looks horrible for everyone. And most of the time, the guy holding the ball gets the blame, even though it's likely a guy who wasn't holding the ball is the guy really to blame for it, especially in the run game. Like at the end, when they were trying to run the clock out and they came out heavy, you did a great job of pointing out, like, maybe it wasn't the greatest play call, and that it
but
it
one guy on every play loses.
Every guy, it's one guy every time.
Yeah, it was first play. I think it was Morgan Moses. Second play, it was Sam Mustipher. And I actually think the rest of the guys on the line did a really good job. Like, you could see where the gaps would have been. I don't think he was going to – Gordon wasn't going to break those runs for massive gains, but it would have gone for 4 or 5 yards, which is a lot better than 1 and then 2, right? And then you're 3rd and 7. So that I completely agree. And, I mean, it was clear as day. It just sucks when one guy is, you know, and it's not – the problem is, too, it's not always the same guy. So you're asking 5 guys up on the offensive line to go out and execute consistently, but then it's like – one guy this play, the other guy the next play, the third guy the next play. And then it's like, well, how do you fix that? Like, how do you fix one guy screwing up every 5 plays? Like, it's tough, man. It's tough.
Yeah, and it always seems like it's a different thing as well. Now, I'm going to put you on the hot seat here, Cole, because you made a mistake earlier today when you tweeted out the Ravens are getting reinforcements back with the big eye emoji. So now we're live here on YouTube, and I got to know, fine. I mean, what can you give us as to who these reinforcements might be?
So what I've been told is, I already shared Ojabo earlier. I think, I don't want to say he's going to play, but I think he's going to get a limited practice in at least this week and be close to playing. So I think Ojabo is going to be getting back in there soon. I'm expecting us to see Ronnie Stanley get a practice in. I don't think it'll be tomorrow. I think it's going to be a limited practice on Thursday. He's pushing to play this Sunday. Marlon is also pushing to play again. He's going to probably get at least a limited in. The big question is, where's his conditioning at, because he hasn't played in a few weeks. So again, I'm not going to say he's going to play because I'm not in the building. I don't know what his conditioning level is. Justice Hill should be able to get back out there. And I was told Gus Edwards was pretty progressing well through concussion protocol. So I think Gus will be able to play next weekend. So, I mean, they are going to, like, be prepared, folks, because tomorrow's injury report, it's Wednesday, going into a divisional game. It's probably going to look like a CVS receipt. And they did lose more players than they did before, but I think they got a few coming back as well.
And what's your opinion of the state of the wide receiver room with Tylan's
injury? Oh, sorry. Great. Yeah. OBJ is going to play. I was
told OBJ is
on track. Sorry. I completely missed the lead there. I was told OBJ is going to play on Sunday.
Wow. That's a big get because, like, what do you know anything more about Rashad Bateman or, like what, when Should did the fine. Injury? Okay. Yeah. He'll be back. Do you think he'll be out there this weekend as well?
I'm expecting, again, he's probably going to have a DNP tomorrow and it'll be a little concerning, but I think what folks need to pay attention to is they're being very careful with some of these practices. Like, even before Ronnie got hurt, he had those DNPs on Wednesdays, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that was looked at as almost load management, like what you see in the NBA, but in the NFL. And that's rare. We don't really see that with guys, you know, nursing longer term significant injuries. Usually it's like once they're back, they're back. Mm-hmm. So I'm expecting we're going to see a little bit more of that from some of the vets that have had injury concerns. So I think it's going to be one of those things where Wednesdays come around and that injury list gets long and you're like, what the heck? But then on the next day, I think you see some limiteds and then possibly some fulls on Friday.
Yeah, they could certainly use it with this team coming up. The Browns, I think, number one right now in the league on defense, which is terrifying. And you look at Za'Darius, Myles Garrett. Oh, man, I hope you're right about Ronnie Stanley, because Myles Garrett looks absolutely terrifying. Did you see the clip where they were chasing him with tight ends as he was running from either side of the line?
It's horrible.
I mean, it's this guy, he's got me a little nervous here. Cole, I mean, what's your quickly your early kind of expectations on how they're going to handle that pass rush?
I think they're going to have to go back to what they did against Cincy, play action, keeping extra guys in, quick pass game. I think they got away from that a little bit too much against the Colts, and I think they overlooked how good this Colts D-line is. And I talked about their D-line a ton going into the game. I not only did I think their starters were good, I just thought they were deep. Like, they were constantly, when they're rotating guys in, it's not scrubs coming off the bench. They had a deep group. Deo Odingba came off and had a sack off the bench, right? Like, and that's a guy replacing a guy like Quiddy Pay, who's playing good in his own right. So I think they overlooked it. I think they tried to play a little bit too vertical on some of those concepts, and they used a ton of 5-man protection. So You know, even when things got tough, they still came out in the fourth quarter. That last drive that we took a look at in that video, the second drive that led to the Lamar sack, ton of five-man protection. So they really didn't – I think they overlooked what the Colts D-line could do.
Yeah, well, they certainly won't be caught off guard with Myles Garrett and Za'Darius Smith. Know those two very, very well. So let's hope that next week's pass – or really offensive line play in general – is a little more sharpened up. Well, Cole, thanks so much for joining us. Don't forget, guys, Cole will be back with us next Tuesday. But also, in the meantime, if you have not done so, go subscribe to his YouTube channel, Road Graders. Check out those videos. Gives you a little bit better insight instead of just looking at the broadcast view where you're very limited in what you can see. Does a great job of breaking down the film, making it easy for a guy like me who's just an average fan to understand all the intricacies of the play. Thanks so much for joining us, Cole. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot, man. Thanks a lot, chat. See you guys out there. Peace out.
See you. Yeah, it's always nice having Cole on to break it down a little more in depth. Hey, DK, what's going on, buddy? As he pops in and pops right on out. He had the look of a kid with his hand in the cookie jar there. But no, it's really interesting because look, the quarterback's going to get most of the blame, but not to say he didn't deserve some, he certainly did. But this was a team loss, no doubt about it. This was a group effort to lose to this Colts team. And look, the good news is every team has its warts. Outside of maybe Miami right now, every team has been beaten and looks beatable in the AFC. So, hey, let's go out there. I like our guys. They're getting healthier, as you heard from Cole. They're going to be getting some key cogs, hopefully, back this week. And if not this week, certainly next week. So, look, it was a tough loss, but I'm still confident going forward that the Ravens have everything in front of them, can accomplish every one of their goals. But, look, we'll be back. That's it for us tonight. We will be back Friday with our live pregame show to get you ready for the matchup with the Cleveland Browns. We will have a guest. Who's a member of the Cleveland media, who will come give us the inside scoop on all things Cleveland Browns. Let us know how they're looking coming up into this matchup. But yeah, let us know if you want to get out some final vents and anything you want to get off your chest before you turn the page next week. Do so in the comments below. Appreciate you guys joining me. That's it for us tonight. See you.